With the arrival of spring, newspaper travel sections are crammed with suggestions for spring fling weekends, trips to Washington, D.C. to watch the cherry blossoms bloom, hikes along newly defrosted mountain trails. But commentator Maureen Corrigan says if you're a city dweller and you're looking for a really exotic and cheap spring getaway, all you need to do is take a bus or train to the last stop where the pavement ends and then start walking.
A few years ago, my husband Rich was in a Florida town on business the same night that two people were murdered there, mob style. As part of the investigation, police detectives tracked down everyone who'd stayed in local motels that night. A detective eventually phoned Rich and towards the end of the interview asked him the license plate number of his car. Rich made a big mistake. He talked too much. He not only told the detective the car he drove in Florida was a rental, so he didn't know its license plate number. He told him that all the cars he drives are rentals, because he's one of those statistically scarce Americans who's never owned a car. "You've never owned a car, sir?" asked the detective. "That's right," Rich said, "and neither has my wife." The detective didn't know if he was talking to a murderer, but he knew for sure he was talking to a weirdo. Even in this age of foreign imports, there's something un-American about never having owned even a used car. And if you travel carless outside the city limits, you find out that Woody Guthrie was wrong. This land wasn't made for you and me. I learned that a few weeks ago when we bought another kind of big-ticket consumer item, a personal computer. My new PC is a lot like my old Barbie doll. It needs tons of matching accessories. And so, always on the lookout for bargains, Rich and I decided to go to one of those computer mega supermarkets. The closest one is in a Northern Virginia suburb, a landscape, obviously, where no one has tried to take a walk since Neanderthal man first invented the wheel. When we emerged from the end-of-the-line metro station, the first thing I saw was one of those signs that read, "Kiss and Ride," meaning you're just supposed to drop off your commuter passengers. But some bitter suburban spouse had blackened out the E, so the sign read, "Kiss and Rid." "How Cheever-esque," I commented. A minute later, I wasn't feeling so smug. I'd spoken to a store clerk over the phone who'd given me directions for reaching the computer store. "It's only 10 minutes from the station," she'd promised. Now I realized that surely the clerk had never walked from the metro station to the store. Rich and I were stranded in a suburban crazy quilt landscape where the Flintstones collided with the Jetsons. 8-lane elevated highways crisscrossed above primeval swampland. Without a space capsule or a car, I didn't see how we were going to navigate. Doing his best Daniel Day-Lewis Natty Bumpo imitation, Rich staked out a path along a drainage ditch. We began walking single file. Every so often I'd trip over a soda can or get bogged down in waist-high weeds, and Rich would call out, "I will find you!" It was funny the first time. Cars and trucks whizzed by, people yelled things, and I felt vulnerable, exposed. It took us a solid hour to reach that outpost of progress, the mall, where we wound up buying an extension cord. Everything else was too cumbersome to lug back through the wilderness. Most people who live in the suburbs think the city is a pretty frightening place. If you ask me, that's because they've never taken a walk in the wild zone beyond their windshields.
Maureen Corrigan teaches at Georgetown University. She and Rich commute to work by bus.